Session number 990, Raymond Coxon, Reel 1.
Mr. Coxon, you joined the army straight from school during the First World War.
Well, I suppose so, because, yes, I was at school, but not the general education school, which I was moved next door to our School of Art at this lovely little town. You ought to see it. It stayed just where it was always. 13 pubs in Mill Street only. It was full of churches, chapels, and learning, too. Marvellous place. I went to it recently, and I was terribly impressed by this town where I did my beginnings. The headmaster was only 29, and he had to go into the army long after I'd gone. But anyway, there were two of us, two men, and when the war seemed to be getting serious, not over by Christmas, it became more difficult to settle down. We weren't terribly loyal. We thought this was going to be over by Christmas. We were very much more intensely ambitious to beat Michelangelo at his own game. Nothing else mattered. We had no money. A kind town council both gave us £15 a year as bogus pupil teachers, you see, which made we could go and get a bowl of soup at the cattle market for tuppence. And then we found a lovely woman who gave us compassionately two coarse and veg for fourpence. So we were doing all right because we were ambitious and we thought 5 shillings was a fair price to pay for paper. Since when I've once sold a picture on toilet paper for more than that. And it was there I learnt never to have anything on tick because I was under 21 and they wouldn't let me have the paper. So, well, we went, first of all, I went down to London, don't tell anybody, and I thought, well, go and try that. What I to talk about, London?
Yes, please talk about the artist's rifle. Yeah.
Well, I went to the artist's rifles, smelling of pie I'd got for 8 pence to eat, to give me courage to do this terrible deed. And I got into the rooms, somewhere near Cambridge Circus. Three men, not in uniform, one at a desk, and I handed my two references of the two headmasters, and they looked at them. Oh, yes. Oh, I said, now, Leek High School. You mean Lee? And they picked out a book and looked through quickly through to L's, and they got to Lee and Leek. He said, it must be Lee. Oh, no, I said, it's Leek. Oh, no, he said, no, if it's Leek, this isn't on my book. I said, I'm sorry. Perhaps you'll be with us sooner or later anyhow. Goodbye. That was a bit depressing. So a couple of months afterwards, we decided we couldn't settle down. We were terrified of a white feather, which some friend of ours found on his jacket and thought a girl had done it. So we went and enlisted and got killed. And I didn't like that white feather business myself. Besides, I was smoking a pipe. My father had already been from the first fortnight of the war into it. It didn't seem appropriate to settle down. We couldn't settle down, so we went to the potteries and said, my boyfriend Dale, my fellow student, was a farmer's son, and his mother was a local preacher, so we were full of that sort of thing, yay, yay and nay, nay. I'll come to that a bit after, something that was very touching for me about yay and nay, nay. Oh, well, I may as well go on with it now. It just sounds a bit disgusting before I've properly... But when we were in the army, they sang these terrible vulgar songs and so forth, which upset me too. I mean, I learnt to say yay and nay, nay a bit. Though my mind was just as dirty as anybody else's. But when they sang, I love my girl, I love her dearly, I love the hole she pisses through, her lily white tits and her nut brown also. I eat her shit with a wooden spoon, I've heard bolderized stories of this, and I repeated this to my friend Brill, who's head of Chelsea. And he said, well, if you're going to do that, you tell it them all. They like that. It'll be better for them than just apologising and do that. And so here it is. <Thank you. laughs> Well, this is a lot of... The army is singing terrible songs and all sorts of silly songs that relieve the monotony. It's a monotonous job. Anyway, we went to this place and wanted to join the yeomanry, because Dale wanted to go to Jerusalem because of his religious connections. And I thought, well, it's rather nice to go to Jerusalem in the yeomanry. They weren't at Jerusalem then, they were at Cairo, which was a good place. And, we said, oh, sorry, we're sorry, you're too tall. You're too tall for the yeomanry, but let me see now, you've got one or two vacancies in the Hussars. What about the 20th Hussars, 18th, 20th Hussars? Will that do? So we looked at one another and said, well, yes, I think that'll be all right. And, they gave us a book, the Bible, and they said, now you have to take this oath of allegiance. And so we got to this, it comes like in court where they have this speech you make. You say, you swear to defend the king, the queen, all his assessors, and Uncle Tom Cobbley, and all the whole lot, you see. A bloody oath you make, and you swear by God you're going to do all this. And I think I've kept that. However, we found ourselves in the army. The first thing that happened to me was, really, not too long after I joined up, got down in Colchester, chucked onto some equipment into a married quarter place full of men, and they said, sleep there, the man's on guard. You sleep there, the palace on the ground. Next morning, it was found out the man had gone into hospital with spotted fever, so we were immediately clamped down. We couldn't go out of the place. And a pale-faced sergeant was really nasty to me. I could have knocked his head off. I was athletic. My father had been boxing. And I'd done a bit of that sort of thing. But no, I managed to keep my temper, which was hard. His face was so nasty and pale. Sergeant robbed me a bit later of half a crown. and I did escape without them knowing, bought some kidneys in Colchester Street and got back without being caught. So I think I was a bit like that. I didn't like regimentation. I'd made up my mind they weren't going to kill my sense of vanity of myself or soul or whatever you'd like to call it. I wasn't going to put that. I was going to take it on the chin. And I didn't realise all this disgusting swearing and shouting and asking a question, they'll shut up, wait before you can reply and all that. You may break my heart, or you'll break my mother's heart, but you won't break mine. Of course I wanted to break anybody's heart at all. But I found all this was a line. They were very nice people afterwards. Very nice. I regret that. I regret this feeling of enmity. And I'm sure other people did. There was one soldier who said, well, as soon as he gets that bastard in the line, he'll shoot the bugger. He's not going to be put up with him. And they said, "Garn, you won't do that." Oh, he said, "I will." I don't know whether he did or not. But after months of training, we found ourselves somewhere, I suppose we were in a reserve, cavalry reserve, because the Battle of the Somme was going on. We were in Maresfield Park here, in these ugly, terribly dreary buildings with a space here, about 4 feet of space, so when winter came, it snowed in.
This is the...
In those
this
are
is
the
a
huts.
Drawing in the sketchbook this of, is, of
yes,
the hut on the first
that's
page.
It, yes, one of them. And this is Dale sketching. Now, it was nice. We went sketching whenever we could, instead of sleeping and that sort of thing. And I marvel at these now because they had to be very small, and they were sent in letters home, and my mother kept them by request. There's some of them very finely drawn. I couldn't do it now. My eyes are not good enough. I'm getting old. I didn't realise that for a long time until I wore spectacles and all that sort of thing. Now, where are we? I've got to the these old men.
This
is one of the old soldiers. See, at the base, it was very unpleasant. Very unpleasant. The people had been invalided home from the hussars, and they were all what were commonly called the scum of the earth. They were so nasty, and the piss bucket overflowed onto men's beds if they happened to be in a palace near in these huts. This was a disgusting sight. I didn't like that at all. There was one moment when I recovered a little bit of self-satisfaction was we used to go jog round in a circle on horses with the stirrups crossed over your saddle, and they said the idea was to fit you into a horse's saddle so that no matter what happened. After I was very grateful for this because I could sleep all night on the saddle and not fall off. But on this occasion, and the rest of us, somebody noticed my saddle was covered with blood. And it drew the attention of the riding sergeant in charge of us, who, to my great horror and embarrassment, said, and because I demurred, I didn't like this idea, the great I am being sent off, he said, you better go back to camp. Sergeant. As a matter of fact, I wasn't feeling any pain at all. It was long past that stage of being pain. It was probably a pimple that had got rubbed through hour after hour. And how it had got through my whipcord breeches onto the saddle, I don't know to this day. However, that spoilt the ride, so we all went home then, and the sergeant must have bandaged it about. So they gave me a terrific horse. It was so good, oh dear. It was practically spitting fire. And I got the job of being in front of the rest as a ground scout to see what was going on. I regretted that because I rather liked it at the time, avoiding the pebbles when you're and your legs being crushed when they all got bunched too near. My sheath of the sword had to go to the armourer when I finished with this horse because I took a cross road and had gone through a rut and I cut its knees through going to some. I thought this was rather low wicket and it was terribly thick stuff and it took the skin off the horse, but it was still spitting fire. And as I raced back to be in front of the thing, because everybody kept turning round on this business, Air Force, what is it? Expeditionary Force manoeuvres in the parks, in the forest, Assam Forest. And when I reappeared, trotting or cantering back to get in front of them again, the chaps had jeered and they could see I was frightened of this horse. One of them was a jockey. And he said, let me ride, I'll tell you. And I thought, oh, well, if it's all right, if he likes it, there must be something in this. So I kept on this. And, very soon I was called up with two or three other people. They said, we want some commissioned in the cavalry. They would be in the cavalry, not be the infantry. They asked the majors, we want to take you to the meeting of the colonel and so-and-so. I said, well, I never thought of that. And besides, I said, I don't think I could afford to do that, because I knew they had a band at dinner at the mansion tonight, and I thought, oh, it's terrible. It's only the idle rich who do that sort of thing. And I said so, and he said, oh, no, we all have to live on our income now. I got into this place, the colonel with blue eyes, named Tickell. He used to live round here, I found out years afterwards. And he stared at me like that. And I began to look confused as he stared at me like that. And they asked me one question. Have you got a banking account? And I said, no, sir. Well, I hadn't. I was getting sixpence a day and eating it all. And nothing more was said. I was finished. Next thing happened to me, I was on a list for joining the new formation of the machine gun corps cavalry. So I had another training. Mm-hmm. I think I was never going to get abroad, and it wasn't quite fair. We should be in reserve here when they were knocking them off like billy hell. However, they were running the war, not me. And so we went to... We put these puggeries on and these funny hats on, Gestapo, and off we went to the east. Yes? Where are we? On the...
I was just wondering if there was a...
Yeah.
This is another drawing of the...
That is another...
No, yes,
there was no blackout notice. Although there was over Croydon, those lights. It was not a blackout there for us. Yes. I suppose I got my puggery on there on that camel.
And this is the drawing of the fiery horse, presumably.
Not quite, but it's the same sort of thing. These horses, they were so stupid they'd go through anything. In fact, one was startled and went through the wire, and they picked up at Chailey, some of them, but kept galloping. Mm-hmm. Awful mess they made. They're lovely, loving animals, but by Jove, they are stupid. Mm-hmm. One lovely sergeant said to me, an old soldier, he was a sergeant in charge, one of the nicer ones and gentle. I think he was treated as like a father a bit, as long as there's nobody watching. And as long as you always said sergeant. And he said, don't volunteer. It's our business to tell you, not for you to volunteer for anything. And he said, and never get behind, never take advantage of a horse. He said, you can treat it like anything. And one day, when you're not watching it, it'll kick your brains out. And I've noticed that this is a thing about horse. They do. You never know what's going to happen to them. I went through 18 horses in my stay in the East and loved them all, but respected them.
Anyway, so at what date was it when you were sent out to Palestine?
It must have been after the Battle of the Somme, because I know we stuck in France for a bit. I thought they were worried lest they should need us to go into the French, and it took us a long time. It's very difficult to remember. I think it was winter. It must have been winter.
Winter of 1916.
Winter months, yes, of 19. So that it was, I was just over 2 years out. I was just over 3 years in the army, but the worst of it was spent training. That was the worst of it. Oh, the way down was rather interesting, where I had first... I was such an innocent chap, really. I wasn't really grown up. And this train stopped and started when it liked. It took days to get down to Marseilles. Mm-hmm. And in one case, we saw a shop down. So some of the chaps got out, and I thought, well, I'll go and get something at that shop. And when I put my foot over the rails... It was drawn, it was alive, you see, and it was drawn by the nails of my shoes onto the line, and I felt hit on the back of the head with a hammer. I couldn't pick it off, but I could slide it off. Mm. And I'd trodden on a live wire, I ought to be dead. And sure enough, when I came back, I thought I was lifting it higher off it, and it drew me down like a magnet. And then I'd slide it off again. Yes, and as I say, we got in... one of the curious things about the army is that there's always somebody who knows something better than you do, and has got a bit more resourcefulness. There was a marvellous man named Sloman, who, when we got to this camp, we weren't allowed to go into Marseilles, but he forged some permits. He might be listening to this, because he's still alive, because once, some time ago, years ago, he rang me up. and checked who it was, because he'd seen something in the telegraph. Mm. And Sloman gave us these, and we all went up the La Canebière, I think it's called, you know, that street, and had drinks up there and back again, marched back. And then packed, it was packed, was the thing, with must have been thousands of us, because you could hardly swing your hammock.
And this that's on the troop ship?
It's on the troop ship, yeah. And it was lovely, we could see a glow of Stromboli, and we moved down through the Straits of Messina. We were escorted by a destroyer there, and we saw this marvellous sight. One of the sights of the world is Etna with a ring, a white ring around it of cloud, and then a point and smoke coming up. It was lovely. And I think that this was quite enjoyable. There were two men quietly doing pocket chessmen on deck. I thought, that's very good. They forget the war and have a game at chess. Then I found that I'd got something called a crab on my frontage, you see. And from that moment, I was lousy, and everybody I met was lousy. We used to have a parade with his shirts up like that, and the officer, who was just as lousy as us, used to pretend to look at them. And we were sometimes were taken to the railhead to have our shirts go in the steam, to put the steam exhaust, and we put the shirts in. But nothing ever cured us. We were all a lousy lot. So it was a rather disgusting business, this lousiness. You never really got used to it. However,
you then disembarked at Portside?
I think it was Portside or Alexandria, I forget which. I've an idea it was Alexandria, which was like Paris, as far as I thought Paris was. I'd never been to Paris then. It was very modern, it wasn't. There was no nudists galling about with tom-toms or anything like that. It was civilised. We had this lovely food was one of the things that was preoccupied you more than perhaps anything else. And I found the first time in my life I could have 5 Egyptian eggs on a plate with bacon for a few piastres, akkas I think they call them, for about 9 pence or something. It was absolutely ridiculous. However, we went up uneventful past Tel El Kebir when somebody said that's where the battle was and the barbed wire is still there. Everything gets left. Oh, one silly thing I did. I walked out, it must have been Alexandria, because the desert comes after the end of the street, it's desert, and I walked along exploring the desert and I found an elbow bone, human. Dry as a bone. And I thought, souvenir, you know, silly business. So I stuck it in my kit bag, but my kit bag left when we went up the line. And when, one to my extreme surprise, the efficiency was such that when, after the war was over, I was given my kit bag left. The first thing I did was to throw it back into the desert again. And another instance farther on, I popped down, I saw a ham. There'd been a short battle which we had to pass through, and a whole lot of rubbish was left and a black object. And I thought to myself, after all, I am a ground scout, I'm going to look at that thing. So I left the line, rode down, and it was a big black ham. And I put it on the front arch of my saddle, and whenever I felt hungry, or anybody else said, got a slice, it lasted a week. And another thing, I saw one of those sheaths that you're supposed to use in the Bible, the old illustration of the Bible, is a little knife, curved knife.
Like a sickle.
Sickle, it's a little sickle. And I thought, oh, that's, Jesus might have had that sickle. I picked that up and fastened it on the front chart of my saddle. I think I kept that sickle as an awful nuisance for over 1,000 miles, and then I chucked it back into the desert. those were rather awful things. The journeys on horseback are studded with misery, silence, and song. When hour after hour column would go along, usually early morning or dusk, most of our major movements were done in the dark, for obvious reasons. See? But they had various devices, all stereotyped. Looking back, I thought this was very strange, that somebody would say something soon, and this is the sort of thing they would say, who the bloody hell was Ticker? And somebody would turn round to the chap behind and say, hey, who the bloody hell is Ticker? And then somebody else would say, don't you know Ticker? No. I said, do you know Ticker? Oh, yes, it's a clap with a cluck in his arse. A Ticker, you see. And that was their form of humour. And that kept people awake for about 10 or 20 minutes. Then somebody would think something equally silly. Somebody started an argument whether it was Crew or Creewee. Mm-hmm. That lasted one of the collections. Somebody ought one day to collect all these rather silly but stupid, sometimes rather touching thing, like that one I already sung. Mm-hmm. You see, my friend Dale didn't, when I said I don't think this was a very nice thing we ought to do, oh, he said, it's all right. He said, this is human. It's animal, it's human, it isn't evil. Like saying, by Jove. Well, that was one for me. Oh dear.
Now, these are some of the drawings you did in Palestine. And then back when you were invalided.
I got a dose of malaria and was down there. And these are done from hospital or convalescent. Mm-hmm. And that's Port Said. Port Said, and this is the 5 a.m. it says here. This is a little watercolour.
Yes.
I was surprised that I could do it so small. Of course, because it was illegal to have anything like that, or dye or anything, I kept this little watercolour thing, a tiny little box in my front pocket. Mm-hmm. It had to be small. This is why they're all very small, these things. And I sent them home and asked my mother to keep them. Mm-hmm. She didn't think she'd ever see me again. She got a War Office notice saying that they'd lost trace of me, but the letters keep coming, so she didn't worry too much.
Oh, good. Good. Despite the War Office. Yeah. Well. And this is...
That's writing a letter home. For